Welcome to the Compassionate Educators Show for teachers who desire to change lives without self-sacrifice. Let's dig deep together into the skill set, mindset, and best practices you and your students need to thrive in today's schools. Now your host, Marie Cooney.
Welcome to today's show, Compassionate Educators. I am so honored and grateful to have with us today a very renowned guest, Dan Hill. You may have heard Dan Hill before throughout different facets, speaking about how we can read facial expressions on others. And we're going to connect that to how you can apply this to your classrooms and help your students be able to navigate the world of emotions and empathy as well. Dan Hill, PhD, is an internationally recognized expert on emotions and personalities. Dan pioneered the use of facial coding in business with a client list that consists of over 50% of the world's top 100 B2C companies. Dan's work has included some fun projects like predicting the success of CBS's hit show, The Big Bang Theory, and he helped Lego develop its movie strips, which, by the way, my son is such a big fan of Legos. Among his books is Famous Faces Decoded, a guidebook for reading others, and for anyone interested in art history, he also is the author of First Blush, People's Intuitive Reactions to Famous Art. He's spoken to audiences in over 20 countries and has been a guest on ABC's Good Morning America and NBC's The Today Show. Thank you again so much, Dan, for being here on the Compassionate Educators Show.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Marie.
Absolutely. And I would love to hear how you became interested in reading emotions and decoding faces.
Probably it's true that the story starts appropriately enough with being a student. When I was 6 years old, my father, who worked for a 3M company, was assigned to a film processing plant in Italy. This means that I suddenly found myself in Italian first grade in a coastal fishing village, not knowing the language. So I waited all day for the math unit. It was the only thing that I could participate in. So that left me a lot of time to read nonverbals, of which Italians are famous for their hand gestures, among other things. So I was really trying to understand the personalities of my new classmates, of my teacher, my whole surroundings. And then as we left Italy and came back to America, my mom, who was an interior designer and very visually oriented, had a stop at the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. And I fell in love with Rembrandt at the age of 7. And Rembrandt is notoriously famous for his incredibly poignant, incisive portraits of people, their personalities, their emotions on canvas. So it took me about another almost 30 years to make this my profession. But in some ways, I saw it as a natural calling once it occurred.
That's absolutely beautiful. And it just goes to show that the environments in which we are in and what we are surrounded with as young children has such a significant impact on us oftentimes as we become adults.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are so sensitive as a kid. And I have to say, if you've ever moved, you know, from one city to another in your childhood, you know, you're an outsider when you first arrive. It makes you really aware of your circumstances. And my family, even after we came back from Italy, moved several times. And all that may have helped in a way. It was painful at the time to root up and move away from friends and have to make new friends. But in the end, I think it makes you probably a more aware and hopefully more emotionally intelligent person.
Absolutely. And I know that you have brought a lot of those insights to your book, Famous Faces Decoded, which I have right in front of me. And it's absolutely fascinating how you have different celebrities and you really hone in on little key elements of their facial expressions and can truly see so much emotions just within how their eyes, within their eyes, their mouths, the way that their mouths are slightly upturned or downturned and forehead, you know, changes. So can you tell us a little bit about how it came to be, how you brought this book Famous Faces Decoded together and your inspiration behind using celebrities to express emotional learning?
Sure. No, I will answer the question. And if you don't mind, I'll probably try to set the stage a bit for the listeners regarding what facial coding is and beyond my childhood, how I actually got there. So in The Power of Words, in 1998, I was trying to ghostwrite a book for a president of a consulting company. He knew someone at IBM who sent over an article from a Cornell University publication talking about the breakthroughs in brain science and the proof that we are largely intuitive, emotional decision makers. My hands were trembling when I finished reading the article. I said, this is the coolest thing. This is the biggest breakthrough in terms of understanding human nature that we've had pretty much forever. And I was just so fascinated to explore it. But then the question was, okay, how are you going to really actually capture and quantify and understand emotions? Because I don't own an fMRI brain scan machine. And even if I did afford it, I wouldn't know how to use it, much less read the information that came from it. I needed something that was more accessible. And as I started rooting around, looking for things, I came across the fact that Charles Darwin came to realize that in your face, you best reflect and communicate your emotions. And there are three reasons why. First, it's universal. I mean, I know school teachers these days, because I have a niece-in-law who's a school teacher in Chicago. I have another friend whose wife is a school teacher here in Minnesota. I have friends who are school teachers in New Jersey, all sorts of places in the country. We have a very multicultural society. So one of the great things about facial coding is it goes across cultures. Even a person born blind emotes the same way as you or I. It is hardwired into the brain. I mean, isn't that just cool enough already? Yeah, it is amazing. It really is amazing. And I've spoken in over 20 countries. I've traveled to 65 countries. I've lived in Italy. I was a student at Oxford. Every place I've gone and done research or went as a tourist, I have looked at people's expressions and they hold up. It really is universal. The next thing that Darwin came to realize was that the face is the only place in the body where the muscles attach right to the skin. It is quick, real-time information as to what is happening to somebody. And when you are a school teacher, and I have been a teacher myself, both in college as well as being a poet in the schools and high schools on a grant program. So, you know, you got to read the room. You got to figure out who's with you, who's not with you, who's confused. That is the great thing about facial coding, is that it's this immediate feedback loop for people. The third thing is that we have more facial muscles than any other species on the planet. So there is absolutely just this wealth of information sitting right there. And I would in fact point out that even before Darwin, probably the world's first great facial coder was none other than Leonardo da Vinci. He got into studying anatomy. He wanted to know how people express their emotions. All of this fed into why Mona Lisa, frankly, is such a great painting, because she has multiple emotions on her face. And it's been argued that the most valuable 25 square inches of territory, visual territory in the world, involves the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, right in the center of the face. It is just a wealth of information. And I think any school teacher can up their game and be a more sensitive, more acute teacher, thanks to using the information that's available there. So with Famous Faces Decoded, I said, yes, I will share the secret sauce, but why not do it in a fun way? So use celebrities, use their photographs, throw in some stories that relate to emotions. Tell people things, frankly, they probably don't know at times about these celebrities. So the book is at one level, I guess you could almost say it's celebrity gossip. At a slightly deeper level, it's an emotional EQ primer, emotional intelligence primer. And then ultimately, if you want to put it all together, it's a facial coding guidebook so you can begin to use this and plug it in your daily life, classroom or otherwise.
Speaking of having teachers use this within their classroom, I really see this as being helpful in two separate ways. One, for teachers to be able to read their students' faces so they can best help them. And two, helping students to identify emotions in others so that they can, again, build empathy and be able to relate to others. And as yourself, as a young boy in Italy, reading the nonverbals from your peers, this could also be very helpful in that sense for all students. So maybe let's go first to how teachers can read their students' faces in order to best help them and understand where they're at. Maybe if they're confused about, let's say, a topic and trying to hide that because they're, in essence, trying to save face, right?
Yes, they are. There are all sorts of terms involving faces, which is a lot of fun as well. So facial coding, if you really start to get down to it, there are 7 emotions that are involved here. Happiness, anger, sadness. Those are all approach emotions of one type or another. There's also 2 reactive emotions, fear and surprise. And there are 2 kind of scorning, aversive emotions, which are disgust and contempt. So those 7 emotions are revealed through 23 different expressions on the face. Sometimes the expression goes to one of those emotions. Sometimes it can apply to 2 or more. So the first thing you're bringing up, which is a good application, is, you know, is the student confused? And confusion, actually, one of the triggers for it, or one of the ways it manifests itself is in terms of anger. Because with anger, you want to control your destiny. You want to make progress. You want to break through barriers you think are unfair. Well, if you are confused, you definitely don't feel like you're in control of your destiny, and you're not going to feel like you're making progress. So one of the ways that can come out is that the eyebrows lower and they pinch together, and you will see a vertical crease between the eyebrows. Now, this can also show fear, for instance. It can show sadness at times. But if they show the eyebrows lowering, the boom is lowering, and the eyes also narrow or the lips press together, then you know it's definitely anger, because anger often involves compression. And it can happen around the eyes. It can happen around the mouth. I'll give you a little quick story. So I thought one of my best lectures in college was going down well until a student came up to me who always sat in the back of the class. So I didn't know facial coding at the time. But he says to me at the end of class, he says, "Great lecture, Professor Hill." And he passes his hand over the top of his head, as in it was all over his head. He couldn't follow it. And it was a little deflating, but it was a good warning sign that you needed to pay attention, because you can think you're really delivering a great lesson plan. And if you don't bring the students with you, you lose them. And if you lost them, then nothing's really happened. So that's a really reliable indicator of confusion on someone's face.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great tip that teachers can use in their classrooms. And just being aware that sometimes when a student presents as angry, it could be that they truly feel a loss of control. And so what can we do to help them with that? So thank you so much for pointing that out. And then also, how do we help students to read each other's faces in a way that's going to help them, for example, be kinder to each other? What are some simple ways that we can use bringing into the classroom some strategies to help our students to learn that about one another?
Sure. Well, let's go through the emotions. I think we'll leave out happiness for the moment, because you were bringing up challenges. So we won't go there, but let's go to 5 of the emotions, which might be defined as negative, though in truth, every emotion has an upside and a downside. Potentially, it's all a matter of how you utilize it. Yeah, you talked about boundary setting. Well, that's anger once again, because anger is, I want to be in control of my destiny. But besides confusion, there are actually 9 different ways anger shows on the face. One that's really good to know that people are asking you to back off, that you're crowding their space, that they want a little bit more room to operate, is when the lips press together, but they press together so firmly that there's a bulge beneath the middle of the lower lip. That is a really reliable way to know that you've gone too far and you need to give them some space. Now, that could happen from a teacher to a student, obviously, but it can also most definitely happen between students. And, you know, every teacher's nightmare probably is they have to break up a fight. Well, this might be a good chance to recognize that someone's getting worked up. And if they go much further with that, you could have a fight on your hands. You will definitely have a fight on your hands, by the way, if the mouth opens in a kind of a horizontal funnel where the lips are really tight, but the mouth is open and has this, as I said, kind of a horizontal funnel. It's almost like a dog where you've taken its bone away from it. It's growling. that is a really intense version of anger. In all of my years of facial coding, we're talking 20 plus years, thousands upon thousands of faces, I have probably only seen that expression, I'll say less than 50 times. So if you have the misfortune as a teacher to see it, the odds that you have a fight about to break out are probably immense. So let's hope you don't have to go there. Let's take on some other things that are a little more gentle. Sadness. I think sadness is a really important emotion and actually can be beneficial in a teaching setting. And here's how. Sadness as emotion makes you slow down. It makes you slow down and ponder something, almost as if nature is saying to you, you just got into trouble, you made a mistake, you have a regret, don't hurry into the next problem. So that's the positive side of sadness, is that it can be a kind of a nurturing, pondering, empathetic emotion. Unfortunately, it can also mean, however, that not only do you physically slow down, you mentally slow down. So someone who has kind of fallen to a state of sadness, say a student, it could be for not just the classroom dynamics, could be something happening in their home life that they're trying to grapple with. That means that's a student where you really need to almost change the cadence of your voice, slow down the lesson plan, loop back around either with just that student or the class or a subset of the class, because they may be struggling more, and sadness could be a sense that they are disappointed that they're not getting it. It could be a sense that they feel forlorn because they feel alone, a sense of helplessness. Ways in which sadness shows on the face, probably the most reliable one that just goes to sadness alone, is that the cheek will rise, but not in happiness with a smile, but there's actually kind of a crease that forms from the bridge of the nose down to, you know, to the far side of the mouth. Think of Charlie Chaplin. He has all these winces in his old silent films because Charlie is constantly falling into adverse situations. You know, he's the tramp, and the tramp is forlorn in many instances. So there's that little Chaplin-esque wince that forms on the cheek. That's a really good sign of sadness. Another sign that's probably easier to pick up at times is that the corners of the mouth go down. We've always seen rodeo clowns, and if we don't go to a rodeo, they have these painted expressions on their face. The only extra twist there, though, is the corner of the mouth going down will show you sadness, but it'll also show you disgust, as in something is poisonous or doesn't taste bad. I don't like it. So there's a little extra flavor going on with that one. The other one, it's a pretty good sign of sadness, is that the inner eyebrows will pinch together, but in this case, they will rise. They will go up rather than just pinching together with the vertical crease alone. A really poignant instance of that is one point, some terrorist in the Caucasus Mountains in Russia had kidnapped students, basically were holding them ransom, and the father had finally retrieved his young son, and the boy was now, you know, going to overcome the trauma, but he still had that expression on his face. And because emotions are so contagious, so did the father. I mean, it's as if the father picked it up from the son, and he was cradling the son, getting him away from the schoolhouse. But those three signals of sadness really, you know, put a probably a demand on the teacher, because you got to bond with this person. You have to really look out for this person. But to have the fellow students recognize this and step in some fashion. If you had someone that you could, you know, bring along as a helpmate in the classroom, if they were able to pick up those signals, boy, that would be fantastic.
And oftentimes it is good to have this practice, to have students practicing reading facial expressions and going along with the theme of your book. I can really see teachers maybe taking, let's say, a movie, right? Taking a movie and having the students try to decode the characters in the movies, decode their facial expressions and match them with emotions. Is that something that you would potentially recommend doing to help students practice reading emotions?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for instance, I recently went through, because I loved the movie, I went through The Wizard of Oz and decoded the emotions of the various characters, the Scarecrow and Tin Man and all of that. No, I think students can relate to movie characters. That's one of the reasons I chose this. In fact, I wrote an art book where the target audience was everyone from people age 8 to 80 who were test subjects. So with Famous Faces Decoded, I also wanted to go very broad. So I tried to give them Hollywood stars they could relate to. I tried to give them, you know, movie stars, you know, from the silent era. I tried to give them rock stars, athletes, you know, young boys, young girls can maybe relate to someone who's a star baseball player or tennis player or whatever. So it can be a movie. It could be TV shows. You mentioned in my lead-in, yes, I looked at Big Bang Theory for CBS, and the traditional research said it wouldn't be a hit, that it was no better than the other shows they were considering for the fall. I practically fell down on the floor laughing because I just said, this is going to be a big hit. But, you know, characters in TV shows show a lot of surprise. They show a lot of animation. So TV shows are a great use.
Is there anything in particular when it comes to distance learning that you have maybe some tips, some advice for teachers in using this technology to be able to understand and read their students more effectively?
Yeah, no, it is a strange era we're living in, and it kind of forces teachers to go back to learning themselves because they have to adapt their lesson plans and their whole approaches. I think from an emotional point of view, there are probably two things that are really crucial that may not occur to you. One is you have to see emoting on their faces. You want to see muscle movement. And here's the reason why. If you go back to Latin, the verb to move, to make something happen, movere, it's actually the root word for both emotion and motivation. You want your students to be motivated to learn. And if you do not create an emotional response in them, you're actually not going to, you know, implant the lesson plans, because memory and emotion are also tightly linked. In fact, there's a part of the brain called the hippocampus. It's your memory device. It sits in the more emotionally oriented part of the brain. If you do not make the emotional imprint, it's as if it's just going to vanish. And so when you're looking at the students' faces, just like when I'm, you know, talking to you and I'm able to look on Zoom, or if I am in a auditorium and speaking to an audience, I'm trying to look at faces and see what kind of connection I'm making. So I want to see them animated to some degree. It doesn't have to be like popcorn popping and it's every second and it's crazy, but I don't want long stretches of what I call bald spots. Pardon to guards, but those moments when someone just drops out and they're not paying attention, because then you're in effect as a teacher, you're talking to yourself and nobody else. The other thing you don't want is actually a disgust reaction on your students' faces. And here's why. If the nose wrinkles, if the upper lip flares, both of them really reliable indications of disgust. Also, the chin can pull up toward the mouth. So it's a chin riser. All three of those show disgust, and disgust in its strongest form, and it's why it shows in these ways probably. You know, the nose wrinkles because something smells bad. The upper lip flares because something tastes bad. It's as if you want to get away from it. Well, the low-grade version of disgust, it's boredom. In other words, it's no taste at all. It's bland. It's boring. You know, I am checking out. So no engagement, bad news. Disgust, engagement, also bad news. And in this new environment, it does put some pressure on the teacher. I think because you don't have the all five senses, you have auditory and have visual, but you're not going to go over and, you know, put your arm on their shoulder for a moment and give them a little playful or supportive hug or pat on the back or something. You've lost the other three senses, and you have to work the other two a lot harder. And it means you're going to have to use more variety, because now the other three senses aren't in the dance. And as a teacher, you're going to have to give them a chance for input, other voices, change the pace. Don't go for long stretches. If you see something is not working, be prepared to improvise out of it. And I'll give you an example. So many years ago, I was speaking in Dubai Before me were three Brits. They were all, frankly, rather boring. I could tell that because that's how the audience was responding. I had sheiks and headdresses, and they were bored, and they were disgusted. And I went, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I don't want to be the fourth person to get this kind of reaction. So I decided on the spot that I was going to introduce things by saying, so the real key to being effective is, in the words of that famous British philosopher, and I paused and they all looked, oh, my God, another boring person. And then I said, Mick Jagger. And then I quoted the lyrics, more and more of this useless information supposed to fire my imagination. I can't get no satisfaction. And I saw the entire audience go shock. You know, their eyes went wide with surprise. They smiled with delight that there was something new. And then they leaned in on their chairs toward me. And I knew I had them. And I was the top rated speaker at the conference. It was a 2-day conference. And sometimes you have to throw people a curveball. Sometimes you have to improvise. You just got to reel them back in. And, you know, you do what you can. I just thought of that standing in the wings. And I said, I got to try something here because my introduction that I had was a little bit too staid. And I just didn't think it was going to go over. These people had been acclimated to boredom at this point, and I needed to break them out of that kind of habitual response.
So you get very creative.
I did.
You're connecting on that emotional level. And that's something that is so useful for teachers as well, because we know I think we've all been there as educators where we are standing in front of a classroom and suddenly there's just that sense that we know that we've lost them. And like you said, reading the room, you can just sense that. And so to bring another type of energy into the room at that point is so helpful, because we don't want them walking away from disgust and forgetting everything that we had just taught them.
Yeah, no, in fact, I just remembered another instance even bolder than that, because it changed everything. I had a speech agent who secured for me a gig talking to, I think it was the Meatpacker Society or something. Well, they were not particularly into facial coding and emotional intelligence, I have to tell you. And I started going through and giving my speech, and you know, it wasn't even just boredom. I mean, it was like distress, like, oh, my God, get me out of here, please. And I went on for about, I don't know, I'm going to say 6 or 7 minutes. And then I thought, oh, my God, this is like the biggest disaster of all time. And I just on the spot said, you know, what I'm talking about, facial coding applies really well to playing poker. And they went, oh, almost to a person. They just like, they completely changed. And I still try to get across the same lessons, the same insights regarding the emotions and how they show, but I channeled it all now, not through marketing, just through poker. And it works so much better, because you do have to find what people are going to relate to, what they care about. That's why I loved your idea of going to movie stars, or, you know, I suggested also athletes, for instance, or TV shows. Give them heroes, give them people that amuse them, that relate to, that they aspire to. Faces are so rich. It's so much fun. It's so visual. It's so quick. It's just a great way to bring people along. You just got to find some unique angle. And some days, the same thing that worked for a class, you know, down the hallway might not work for this class, you know. You just never know. You just got to be open to the possibilities.
That's absolutely true. And this is an activity that teachers can bring in into the virtual classroom space as well, and posting pictures and having the children decide what emotion they believe that character is expressing, and even coming up with lessons in which the students are going to be watching a show on their own and coming back into the virtual classroom setting and sharing what they learned with their classmates. So this can be used in so many different ways.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, emotions go everywhere, and they're so contagious as well. So we haven't talked about happiness yet, so let's go there. I actually think about happiness on 4 different levels. Kind of the lowest level of happiness is the begrudging smile, like that's the worst joke I ever heard, but at least you tried to humor me. So that comes out, but a great smile, a true smile, is when the muscle around the eye relaxes and you get the twinkle in the eye. That's the home run. So as a teacher, obviously you'd like to get a few of those because happiness is not a trivial emotion as a teacher. There are studies to show that happy people or people who are made happy in the moment are more open to learning. They embrace ideas. They embrace others. They brainstorm superior solutions more quickly. So just like sadness slows you down, it means as a teacher, you've got to, you know, pivot and maybe give more time and reiterate something. With happiness, if the happiness is happening, people are just taking off with it. And happiness and fun exercises where people are embracing others means getting to that kind of state, using some kind of prop or story idea for a classroom that induces happiness is a great opportunity for teamwork. Because now they're just going to be playing off each other and they can provide the emotional energy. You always are looking for emotional momentum. That's what you want as a teacher. Because for one thing, and I've been a teacher, it is exhausting to be a teacher. It is a lot of work to be a teacher, and it involves a lot of emotional labor. So you're doing the intellectual labor and you're doing the emotional, social labor. So happiness is your ally as a teacher. It is your chance to let the students feed off each other, get themselves going. And so it's just a wonderful emotion to take opportunities for. And there's another way in which it's allied nicely, which is surprise. With surprise, the eyes go wide, the eyebrows lift. It's like you're trying to open up your field of vision to take in more information. So you love to see that in your students. Mm-hmm. And if you can bring happiness, particularly that joyful smile, along with a surprise, then you have a wow moment. And one of the ways that you can make it easier for yourself as a teacher is as you move from one exercise to another, or you get ready for the next day, if you can end the class, I've learned this from someone who's run workshops, if you can end a class or a particular module that you're teaching with a wow moment, it just gives you a springboard to the next unit or the next class because people are going to remember the wow moments. And it's just like having candy. The students are going to want more of it. And so it just sets up a nice dynamic because I've gone into the classroom and I mentioned I was a poet in the schools. And you would come in, you could tell really quickly the teachers who had built up empathy and emotional equity with their students. It was just a delight to be in those classrooms. And so creating the wow moments, I think, is one of the ways to get there, leveraging the happiness to create team exercises and let them feed off each other is another great way to do it.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned that because I know that there's a lot of educators who really try to bring in that joy into the classrooms and have fun activities. And sometimes they are seen as having too much fun in their classrooms, but truly, truly, those students are, as you said, they are learning so much by having that emotional connection with their teacher, with others, and that joy, that happiness is going to help them with the teamwork and help them to come up with new solutions. So I'm so glad that not only do you have the science, right? We have the science behind this being true. But then it also, again, is just impacted by the way the students are, you know, working together and really being connected with one another, bringing in that empathy as well. So, Dan, there's so much. You have shared so much goodness here. I am absolutely so grateful, and I could listen to you speak about this truly all day long. I absolutely love it. So, and I know that those listening here on the Compassionate Educators Show probably would love to know how they can continue to stay connected with you and follow up with the great work that you are doing.
Sure, that's very kind of you. And I'll give a few tips. So obviously, there is the book Famous Faces Decoded, a guidebook for reading others, and that's available through Amazon. But I have a website. And it is the obligatory three W's and then danhill.sensorylogic, as in your five senses, danhill.sensorylogic.com. And you can find more information, some of my speeches, other books there. You can also send me an email at dhill@sensorylogic.com. I haven't put it up on the website yet, but I'm actually planning to launch some one-day retreats. I winter in California these days in the Palm Springs area. So for teachers who would like to be warm in the winter months and coming from northern climates, not only can they meet with me for a day, but they can then go to Joshua Tree or do other fun things while they're in town. But that's going to be another avenue. So if you give me your email address, I can put you on a mailing list and give you, a contact. I'll probably be launching those in 2021. Eventually, they might go around the country to different locales. I have lots of different avenues I can take with this, but education, I grew up in a college town. Education really matters to me. It's been formative in my life. I'm happy for the reach out, but I would say dhill@sensorylogic.com, and the book is a great way to start.
Absolutely wonderful. And we will make sure to put all of your contact information in the show notes as well. And put me on that list for your retreat. That's fabulous.
I thought it might be a little bit attractive being in Wisconsin come wintertime. Being from Minnesota, we joke there's only two seasons in Minnesota, winter and road repair.
So, that's exactly true here as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much. And we will, again, be sure to put all of that information into the show notes. And I appreciate your time.
Oh, no, I had a lot of fun. Thank you, Marie. Keep up the good work.
I truly hope that you enjoyed this week's episode of the Compassionate Educators Show. And if you are interested in obtaining more resources and having a community of compassionate educators surrounding you, please go to the Compassionate Educators for Life-Changing Teachers group on Facebook. There you'll find additional strategies, tools, and community to help you be a life-changing teacher without sacrificing yourself in the process. Until then, take care.